Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'll be continuing my discussion of how fear of danger, however unconscious, keeps us from doing what we might want otherwise to do. And today, I'll be talking about how fear of past danger stops us. Also, I'll be playing interviews that I did with artistic couples. First will be Bill and Susan Seaforth Hayes, who you probably know best from their performances on the soap opera Days of Our Lives, and then Roberta McDonald and Bob Turoff, actors, directors, producers, founders of the Golden Apple Theater in Sarasota, Florida. That'll be coming up in just a second. Actually, here it comes now. The Lynn Show, coming to you on the Radio Ear Network, as always, on Tuesdays at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, or on Mondays at 3 o'clock in the morning, both Eastern Standard Time in the United States. And I am coming to you, as I almost always am, from Sarasota, Florida, where it is very beautiful. I'm recording these shows in my home. And gratefully, we have had downpours, thunderstorms, lightning, thunder. And it's dangerous to be attached to anything that might remotely be connected to outside when it's lightning. You know these things if you live in the lightning capital of the world, as I do. I heard just the other day that what lightning likes to do is it likes to connect to something and then follow it. So if you're on the telephone, you're in danger of the lightning following the phone line into your ear. But if you're standing near the sink, you're in danger of the lightning following the plumbing into your house and onto your hand. Anyway, we have a break in the rain, and so I'm taking that opportunity to record now. If should it begin to rain, I'll have to stop. Well, rain is okay. It's lightning that's the problem, and we've been having these amazing thunderstorms, which, of course, we're very grateful for, because while the rest of the country is flooded, we are in drought. So until we figure out how to do better with our environment, I guess we're just going to suffer these terrific imbalances. But this is not in any way a political show. It is not that I don't have political points of view, as you may have noticed, but that's not what this show is about. I never really want this show to be about that. For the purposes of this show, I'm not taking sides. For the purposes of this show, for those of you who may not have listened before or maybe new, you know, 1 or 2 weeks or like that, I like to explain at the top of the show that, for the moment anyway, I have two agendas. The first agenda is to continue to talk about why we as human beings cannot always do what we want to do when we want to do it. It's the seems counterintuitive, because we're a culture that believes if only we want to, if only we try hard enough, you know, if at first you don't succeed, et cetera, et cetera. But that's a myth. The belief that simply wanting it and simply trying hard enough is all that it takes, it's a myth. I'm sorry. I spent the first couple of shows actually talking about the myths about change. And as I try and find a time to say in every show, if you want to hear those early shows, they are on my website, thelynnshow.com, L-Y-N-N-E, The Lynn Show, one word. You can go up there and listen to the early shows. Anything that I make reference to, it'll be up on the website. And I suppose while I'm doing that, I should also say the book from which all these concepts come, my book, When You Can, You Will, is also available on the website, although I'm running out of copies. So, boy, if you're interested, email me. You can hear me reading a little bit from the book on the website. You can also hear, by clicking on the CD, pieces of the CD that I made, which is called I Won't Go With a Whimper. And the song that opened the show, the one you just heard, You Really Can, and the song that closes the show, which is the title song from the CD, I Won't Go With a Whimper, are, of course, both on the CD. And I'm having an opinion poll in this month, which I sure hope is the month of July, although because I record these shows in advance, I'm not always positive when they're airing, but I'm hopeful that these will all air in the month of July, and in this month I am having an opinion poll. So, if you think that the show should continue to open with You Really Can and continue to close with I Won't Go With a Whimper, or it should be reversed, please go up on my website, thelynnshow.com, and click on Contact Me and tell me what you think. And if you want to hear little pieces of the rest of the CD, please click on that icon. It takes you up to CD Baby, which, in case you didn't know, is an internet music store. And if another song on that CD seems to you more appropriate for the beginning of or the end of the show, let me know. Okay, so I'm working my way through When You Can, You Will, explaining different reasons for our inability to do what we want to do when we want to do it. I am currently on chapter 4, which is also part 2 of the workbook that accompanies the book. And chapter 4 and part 2, at least part 2 begins with this. Chapter 4 is all about the potential of danger keeping us from changing, doing what we want to do. Mostly these are unacknowledged dangers, because we're so focused on the goal in this culture, so obsessed with the outcome, that we are quite often in denial for a danger that we anticipate. That is, we anticipate it, but we don't know that we anticipate it. That's what denial is. Our unconscious is protecting us from this information. But it is also protecting us from the change so that we don't run right into that danger. So I've been talking about the possible kinds of dangers that one can be avoiding, and that's why we're not changing. I want to do a quick recap of that so that if you're either this is the first time you're listening, or even if you've been listening, this information is so counterintuitive to our culture that it can be hard to hold on to it. So a couple of weeks ago, I talked about the concept of catastrophic expectations, things that we imagine will happen when we do this thing that we're having trouble doing. And last week, I talked about future dangers being those things which we have not yet tried. I explained about the growing edge and how you need to go off the growing edge if you're going to do something you haven't ever done before, and how perfectly appropriate it is to be apprehensive or anxious or even scared when you're doing something you have never done before. In this show, I'm going to talk about past dangers. That is when what you want to do, you have actually done before, and it didn't have such a good outcome. If what you want to do now is similar to or even resembles something that you did in the past that didn't work out well, that had a bad consequence, then you will be reluctant, maybe even not able, to do that thing until your unconscious believes that you can survive, even if the worst was to happen. I've been talking about this particular concept in every show about danger. That is, your unconscious is monitoring how safe it is. And the safe is not that you'll get what you want, but that if you don't get what you want, if you come in contact with one of your worst catastrophic expectations, if you have a bad outcome, that you won't be devastated by it, that you will endure, that your self-esteem will stay intact, that you will be okay. Until that's possible, your unconscious just throws up roadblocks to these things. You may not even realize it, and you might be doing what most of us do, which is yelling at yourself, calling yourself names, thinking of yourself as self-destructive. But I promise you, if there's something you want to do and you haven't been able to do it, you are not self-destructive or lazy or crazy. There's nothing wrong with you. There is likely a danger that your unconscious sees and which it believes will be too devastating for you to endure. So, in this show, I'm going to talk about past dangers, what they're like, what you can expect, what kinds of past dangers there are. And before I do that, I want to talk about something that is really in the ballpark of past dangers. It's come up a number of times in therapy sessions that I'm doing. Oh gosh, did I forget to say that I'm a therapist in this session? In this show? I'm sure I did. Okay, so I'm a psychotherapist and have been for many, many years, and I'm still in private practice, although my entire practice is on the telephone these days. And actually, I wrote an article about that, about phone therapy, which also is on the website if you're curious. So this thing has come up a number of times recently, and it is the idea that what you think determines how you feel. We all are, what is the word? Guilty. We all are guilty of saying, well, he did, she said, they did, and that's why I feel the way I do. She rolled her eyes at me, or he mocked me, or whatever it is. And so I felt bad, or I felt scared, or I felt angry. Maybe you know this. Maybe it's really simplistic. But it is not what they said or did. It's what you did with it, what you thought about it. She rolled her eyes at me. I thought that meant that she thought I was stupid. Oh my God, she thinks I'm stupid. I feel embarrassed. The embarrassment is directly related to what you told yourselves about the fact that she might think you were stupid. Not that she thought that you were stupid, but what you told yourself about it, what you thought about it. This is so important, because when you can capture the moments that you are saying to yourself the things that trigger feelings that make you feel bad, you can stop doing it. Okay, I will no doubt talk more about this. Actually, this is related to some earlier shows I did about brain chemistry, which are also on the website. But now, let me talk to you about past dangers, what they are, and how they can stop you from changing. When you can't do something that you always thought would come easily or naturally, like making friends or finding love or choosing a career, it may be your reluctance to confront a past danger that's stopping you. Unpleasant past experiences become past dangers. But past dangers can be really hard to identify because they are usually based on unpleasant memories, which we have often forgotten. Whether we consciously remember the event or not, we base our expectation of what will happen primarily on what has happened. We compare what we're going to do with what we already have done. The more the event in the present resembles or duplicates or even suggests the event in the past, the more certain we are that the outcome will be the same. If, for example, your parents ridiculed your favorite toy or your special game, you may have trouble choosing a career today. If your early attempts to show affection were rebuffed, you may be afraid to offer your love today. But, on the other hand, if you felt smothered by your parents' love, you may shy away from love offered by others. If our past experiences were pleasant, delightful, harmless, or fun, we look forward to the new ones that resemble them and expect that they too will be pleasant and delightful. But if our past experiences were unpleasant, difficult, hurtful, or damaging, we face the new experience that resembles it with distress. Okay, let me tell you about the diving board. Imagine that you're standing on a very, very high diving board, and you're looking down at a tiny pool of water into which you know you have to dive. The diving board is a safe, if restricted, place to stand, and the dive into the tiny pool, well, that's the change that you want to but can't make. This is not a physical dive. This is an emotional dive. It's the reliving of a painful past event you hoped you would never have to experience again. When the change you want to make requires you to relive a painful past experience, making the change means making the scary dive. The prospect of making this dive is so terrifying, it's a good reason to avoid making the change. Later, I'll explain how you carefully manage not only to avoid making the dive, but even to forget that there's such a dive to be made. This is because as long as you can stay safely on the diving board, you don't have to confront your past danger. Maybe you know the story of the cat who loved to sit on the stove and bask in the afternoon sun. One day, while she was curled up on the stove, she got burned. Uncharacteristically, somebody was cooking in the afternoon. They never again cooked in the afternoon, but the cat never again risked the hot seat. You see that we humans are not so different from this cat. If badly enough burned, we may not be willing to risk the hot seat, no matter how temptingly the afternoon sun beckons. One of the most powerful past dangers that blocks our path to change is that of blowing our cover. Now, I've talked a lot about cover story in earlier shows, and again, there is a podcast up on the website that explains the cover story and gives you exercises to help you try and figure out what your cover story is. That's if you were not listening to those early shows and you don't know what I mean when I'm talking about cover stories. But you have a cover story, we all have cover stories, and one of the most powerful things that can get in the way of stuff that we want to do is the dreaded possibility of blowing our cover. Because the earliest lessons that you learn in life teach you which truths about yourself will bring approval and which will bring rejection. And rejection in our early life is absolutely intolerable. So the painful memory, conscious or not, of being rejected, maybe because you were a smart aleck or a crybaby, those memories make the prospect of being too smart or too sad a terrifying past danger. And therefore, any change that threatens to expose you as a smart aleck or a crybaby has to be avoided. When you're surprised that you can't do the thing you want to do, when you expected it to be simple, and you're perplexed to find that it's difficult, when the thing you can't seem to do is something that others can do easily, suspect that that you might be in the presence of a potential past danger. Okay, that's a lot of information, a lot to take in at one time, so I'm going to stop talking about why we can't do what we want to do, when we want to do it, and I'm going to move on to the second agenda of my show, which is playing interviews that I did with artists, the Anatomy of an Artist series, which I am enjoying so much. In a previous show, I played the interviews with Bill Hayes and Susan Seaforth Hayes, who you may mostly know from their long-running association with the soap opera Days of Our Lives, but you might also know from seeing them in a variety of other kinds of entertainment venues. They've done everything. So in an earlier show, I played the interview with Bill and the interview with Susan, but there wasn't enough time to play also the couple interview. The couple interviews are really interesting. A lot of the people that I have interviewed are long-term marriages, and you may know that that goes against the conventional wisdom. Lots of marriages aren't lasting these days. Anyway, Susan's and Bill's is, and I just want to tell you that right before I turned on the tape recorder, I don't remember whether I left this in the interview or not, but I had used the word bashert in talking to Bill, because maybe you guys don't know, to be bashert, and actually I wind up talking about this a lot with these people, things seem just to work out for some of them. Bashert is a Yiddish word, and it mostly means beloved or the one that is meant for you. But I use it, and I think colloquially a lot of people use it, to talk about things that just were predestined, that they flowed so easily that they were bashert, meant to be yours. So a lot of Bill's career looked like that to me, and I used the word when I was talking to him, and he didn't know what it meant. And when we were joined by Susan, the first thing he said to her was, "So do you know what bashert means?" And she did. And so you can hear the first thing that he says in the interview is something like, "No matter how long you are married," and then I say, "Well, you know, you always learn something." So that's where that's coming from. It seems to come out of nowhere. Anyway, enough of me. Here are the Hayeses. See, no matter how long you're married, you always learn something. So speaking of married, I am here with Bill and Susan, who have been delightful and charming individually. And I explained, I think, to both of you individually that I got interested in not only interviewing artists about their own work and their own feeling about being performers or writers or directors or photographers, but about what it means to be a creative couple. Because it's not so simple, I think. Although, to listen to you two, it seems to have been pretty simple.
Well, we lucked out. Somehow, Susan understands when I do something, and I understand when she does something. And as we discussed before, you have a marriage that's one showbiz and one not. That understanding maybe can never happen.
No, I think that it's an interesting, conundrum. On the one hand, a relationship where one person is in the arts and the other isn't, that has its obvious strains.
Yep.
But relationships where both are in the work can also have, there's the possibility for competition. There's, the possibility for one working and the other one not, or...
Well, I have had friends who were married it was difficult.
Yes.
Both in the same business. But somehow we haven't encountered that. If Susan has to get up early and go off and do a show, I understand. If I have to do the same thing, she understands.
We do understand how the schedule of show business can take over the immediate moment. But it's only the immediate moment, and we both understand that it's a corporate endeavor. If you're putting on a play, there's more than one person involved, and you have to be there at a certain time, and you have to give lots and lots of hours to it, and it's going to be exhausting, and attention must be paid to that, and you must have fewer demands from their family time. Some people can't stand it. They assume that if you're doing a play and 15 cousins have come from St. Louis and you are there and they are there, well, by God, you have to have dinner before the show with all of them and then go out drinking afterwards. Not possible!
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I love you. I appreciate the fact that you support my work. I cannot give you my free time. I must retain my energy for the performance, please! I love you and thank you for buying all those tickets, but I can't sit up and drink with you until 3 o'clock the next day because Saturday I got a matinee! I still love you. Not all families understand that. I am going to work in the arts. I am going to work sporadically. I will not be employed 52 weeks a year or 50 weeks a year. I may be employed, if I'm lucky, 30 weeks a year. I'm not a bum because I'm only employed 30 weeks a year. However, there will be a percentage of your family that is going to say, even after you have been a union member in three unions half your life, when are you going to get a real job? Work in show business comes and goes, and the pink slip is part of the contract. No job lasts forever, except for soap opera. And there we have been very fortunate. But if you don't have the stomach for uncertainty in an uncertain world, then you really don't belong in show business. And I never had the stomach for uncertainty. I still don't. I still pine and worry. I'm the worrier. Bill is the glass half full. I'm always the glass half empty. And I have often thought I should have been a farmer when all I had going against me was subsidies and God, you know. Those things I could face, but the thought of continued unemployment would be hard. I would go out, and I know that I could go out and plow and say, this is where I belong. This is, things are going well. I'm working all day long at something. But part of my problem with show business is not having something to do between engagements time. I get a little frenzied. Bill doesn't. Bill's fine.
Are you?
Yeah, that's probably true. I look for things to do, try to be creative. I had just mentioned to Lynn about our writing our memoir.
Yes.
And so she said, well, then maybe we need to both speak to that. We wrote our book in 5 months, just wrote all day, every day.
How did you do it? Did you assign, like, you know, you write this chapter or you write this part of it, or you did you make an outline and then break it up, or did you just write what you wanted and then see if it went together?
We worked with an editor who tried to explain what a chapter meant. who was very helpful. The miracle of email, we were able to have it reviewed in progress. Her saying, well, I know exactly what you served at the wedding, but what were you feeling, Susan? And she was always asking us to dig deeper. We reached a state of intimacy at the end of the experience that was much deeper than it was at the beginning.
And between the two of you?
Between the two of us, actually saying, well, honey, that isn't the way it happened. It isn't? No, it isn't. Okay, take this and redo it.
Well, let me stop you for a second. I'm really interested to hear that. And you know what you were trying to write?
Not really. We started and kind of felt our way into it. First, we had to decide, okay, do we want a ghostwriter?
No.
And we
didn't need it, fortunately.
Discarded that idea. Do we want a co-author or something? No. Do we want to write in one voice? No. We finally worked it out.
So it became...
Susan would say what she thought, write her thoughts, and I would write mine. That helped us get started, so I could tell about my past, and Susan could tell about her past. Sometimes, some chapters, it goes, he says, she says, he says, she says.
That's
and
adorable.
We comment a little bit on each other. It was an experience that just kind of grew and slowly took its shape.
And we were interested in being honest, figuring, well, this is our one go at telling what it is we know about our lives, and what it is we've learned by being in the business,
yep.
And what it is we love about the business and each other.
It's really a love story. It says on the cover, it's a story of love. Well, it's a love of our craft, a love of each other, a love of family, a love of relationship, several loves all together. That's what it ended up being.
So we titled it Like Sands Through the Hourglass.
Yeah, it's very clever.
That is the beginning of the Days of Our Lives show, is the voice of McDonald Carey saying, like, sands through the hourglass, these are the days of our lives. And we were asked by the Corday family not to use Days of Our Lives in the title.
Original idea had a title like this, and these are the Days of Our Lives. He requested us not to use the name of the show in the title.
Do you know why?
His mother had...
wanted
it never to be in anything but the show. The show in the Bible.
Yes.
Well, we could we could have gone ahead and done it, but...
Other cast members have gone ahead and done it. Other cast members have gone ahead and written a book about the show and never told anyone who was involved in the show. I wasn't interested in being that groundbreaking, and I didn't want to... I felt you had the potential to make a lot of mistakes doing that. So,
and enemies.
Yeah. And
so
why?
The producer,
why?
So the show has been great for us, great for the viewers. Why spill the milk? So we presented the manuscript to the producer and one of the stars of the show at the same time. And one of the stars of the show was extraordinary in the detail with which she read it, and very affirmative about everything. The only negative things she said was, she said, you must not talk about yourself being so fat, Susan.
You're not that fat.
Which I appreciate. I loved her even more after that, of course.
She was great. She went through and did post-its all through the book. Mm-hmm. And I wish we'd left them right there and just kept that.
Yeah.
That
saying,
good.
I love this.
Yeah.
Oh, this is good. Yeah. Oh, I'm crying reading this. And that was all good. The book is now available on our website. And it has been in the stores, and it's had several printings, and has done very well. And we're happy to send it all over the country, autographed to your grandmother, your mother, your dear aunt.
And if you want the book, you can come up on my website and tell me, and I will let Susan and Bill know, and we'll get the book for you.
Yes.
Okay. Or you can put a link on it to BillAndSusanHayes.com.
You know, I was just going to say, then we must have, right, say it again.
BillAndSusanHayes.com.
BillAndSusanHayes.com, absolutely.
How simple is that?
How simple is that? That's great. When did you do this?
Came out October 2005. And we did a lot of...
Did you tour?
Yeah.
We did a lot of that for the first year and less the last year or so.
We did Martha Stewart and gave away our book to everybody in the audience to cheers. And when we came on, we had a standing ovation. Uh-huh. And Martha said, what do you think of it? Isn't that unusual and nice? And how does it feel to be an icon? Because I think we're a little young to be icons, which is just us.
You're young to be an icon.
I don't think you can ever be too young to be an icon.
Ah, it's very nice.
I think it's really wonderful. Okay, so you have your various careers and your various lives, and then you meet on Days of Our Lives. Now, was one of you working there before the other, or you got on together? So you were already working there?
Yeah.
Susan started working on Days in November 1968. I started in February 1970. So we were...
Oh, so you were well-established by then on the show.
Yes.
16 months before I was had arrived. And we didn't meet for the first couple of months.
Because you didn't have...
We didn't have scenes
characters
together.
Characters appeared on different shows.
Different shows, different days.
And then finally they decided that
finally we happened to work on the same show and in the same episode. And then an interesting thing happened. We did a couple of scenes together, and Bill Bell was our head writer, really a genius writer. I mean it, genius. And he saw something go between Susan's eyes and my, and said, I'm going to write some more scenes for them. I think I'm going to write a flirty scene for them. I'm going to write a couple of love scenes for them. And he would just put us together. He saw something. My character was supposed to do something with a different character. We were supposed to have a plot with somebody else. He changed
it. He changed it. And he saw a great deal in our relationship before we did, and he was the eyes of the audience as well as the creator of the show.
He was living
in Chicago creator.
At the time.
He didn't know my personal life or who I was, but he had cast me, and he had cast Bill Hayes. And he had known Bill before his wife had interviewed him in Chicago, where she was a famous television personality. But he was charmed by us as a couple, and we wound up staying at his apartment in Chicago from time to time. He found my mother as a talent, as a writing talent. He transitioned her out of acting into writing and gave her a writing career with Emmy nominations and the great joy of her life. So he then took me when I had been let go from Days of Our Lives. He then put me on The Young and the Restless for 3 years in a role he created for me. So I have often thought that I more or less owe all the good in my life to Bill Bell, who is now the late Bill Bell, but was considered the lion when he passed. He was referred to by TV Guide, by Mike Logan of TV Guide, as the Lion King of soap opera. And he was that person. My marriage came from Bill Bell. My career came from Bill Bell. My mother's happiness and retirement fund came because of Bill Bell. So you put all that together, and you said, gee, show business can do good things.
Well, not only show business, but certain people can really do.
Yes.
You know that story about the man who's walking down the beach, and he sees a young man on the beach, and the beach is littered with starfish, and this young boy is throwing them into the water. And the man walks up to him and he says, what are you doing? You can't save all these starfish. And he says, as he picks one up, yeah, but I can save this one. It's that idea that you can make a lot of difference.
Yep.
You know,
one person.
Right. And in this case, clearly, I mean, my guess is you're not the only person in whose life he made a lot of difference.
That's exactly true. Hundreds.
Yes.
Hundreds of people. Yeah. He rewarded talent. He was loyal. And those are qualities that you don't necessarily encounter every day.
And a classy guy.
And a classy guy.
Yeah. Very classy.
Well, and so I think, you know, what you said, which I think is probably absolutely right, is that he saw that thing happening maybe before you saw it. So then you were sort of thrown together.
Right.
You were a couple in the eyes of most of the world. And then at some point, I guess you decided.
Bill was waiting for his youngest daughter that he had custody of. He had custody of his 5 children following his divorce. And he was waiting for his youngest daughter to graduate from high school before he felt he could make any move in his own personal life. So she graduated. He took all of his children to England for a month. We did Oklahoma for Bob Turoff at the Golden Apple.
And my parents enjoyed
their
50th wedding anniversary, which was a nice affirmation of relationship. But prior to that year, that was 1974, I was very angry for a few years, and I was not about to get entangled.
Yeah.
I couldn't, for a long time, see any future relationship until all those things just came on me one after another, and I said, yeah. You can have a relationship after all. And that's when I said to Susan, how about a week from Saturday? She said, yeah.
Susan had been waiting. I had moved from my family home closer to the studio, but also closer to Bill. I had joined his church, and his minister knew us both. And by now, the years had rolled by. And
how many years are we thinking?
4. And my minister had said, you know, Susan, I think he loves you, but you're going to need to exercise a little patience and self-control.
Oh! am I right in assuming that those aren't your strongest suits?
Right. And that was the advice that I took, and the best advice I ever had. Mm-hmm. So he married us in the end and has married some of our children and has married some of our
grandchildren.
Oh.
sharing.
Come in and share.
I'm so sorry.
Something you need in the closet.
Just let me say, since I probably won't edit this out, I am interviewing the Hayeses in a box room, right?
Well, it's an interior room.
It's an interior room in the Golden Apple Theater where Bill is currently appearing and where Susan has just finished appearing. And
she was wonderful as Mrs. Bryce, Fanny Bryce's mother in Funny Girl with a funny Yiddish accent.
And Billy is wonderful in Chicago.
Yeah.
With no accent at all. But tap dancing all over the place.
So we're in this tiny interior room because it's raining.
And yes, and the rain on the roof, that pitter patter of the rain
on the roof
means
right.
You couldn't record the sound.
That's right.
That much rain.
It's room
today.
9 by 12.
Right.
In any event, it's also a room where they store things. Shall we say closet?
Yes. And shall we say closet?
And Felicia just came in to get something out of the closet and found us in it.
Yes. Right. And soon we'll all come out of the closet.
Soon we'll all have to come out. I have to go out of the closet and move the car because my time's up for parking.
Oh, goodness. Well, okay. Then I guess we'll have to... I hadn't thought about that at all. And the time is really rushing by. I didn't realize it was that long. I'm sorry because this is so sweet. Talking to you is so, so sweet. And I admire you both so.
Thank you.
You know, I mean, aside from your talent, your commitment to each other. And I will get and read your book.
All right.
Yes. I hope you have a few laughs.
I'm sure you guys are funny.
We have one right in there.
We have one. We have a book here.
They have three copies in there. We'll get one of them and give them.
Well, terrific. Maybe you'll sign it for me then.
Sure.
Yay. Done deal. All right. Okay. So just let me ask you to think for a second if there's anything that you want to say about the life as a creative couple, and we'll end with that.
I think it's possible to be a couple and have your own creative path. However, if those paths cross, it can be even richer. I enjoyed show business, but I love it now, and I feel a passion for it that has been colored by my experience of being Mrs. Bill Hayes. My passion for Bill is colored by the fact that he loves what he does, and he is so good at it. Love is possible, productivity is possible, and longevity in both of those is possible.
So lovely. You think you can add to that?
I would say that the only thing I would add is for a relationship, which you mentioned, I give thanks every day.
Yeah. I understand that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, both of you.
Thank you.
True to their word, Bill and Susan gave me an autographed copy of their book, and I have been reading it, and it's really terrific. So I want to make a plug for you to go up on billandsusanhayes.com and order their book. Or you can go up on The Lynn Show and order mine. I hope that you enjoyed that interview. They are just adorable. Before I play the equally adorable Bob Turoff and Roberta McDonald, I want to remind you that in this month I am asking you to participate in an opinion poll. If you heard the beginning of the show, you heard my opening music, which is a song called You Really Can from my CD. And if you hang out till the end of the show, you'll hear the closing music, which is a song called I Won't Go With a Whimper, also from my CD, actually the title tune from my CD. And I'm asking my listeners to please let me know if they think I should continue to use these songs in this order. Should I continue to open the show with You Really Can and close the show with I Won't Go With a Whimper, or should I reverse them? And I'm asking you to go up on my website, thelinshow.com, and click on Contact Me and vote. And also, if you're curious, you can click on the link to the CD, and if you hear another song there that you think would be better to open or close the show, I'd like to hear that too. So thank you for participating, and at the end of the month I will let you know. Well, probably actually not until next month, because I record these shows a lot earlier. So I won't be recording the show in which I know what happened in this month until sometime next month. I think that's how it goes. Anyway, I will let you know as soon as I can. I don't remember if I mentioned in every single interview that I did there that I was doing the interviews with Bill and Susan and also Roberta and Bob. That's Roberta McDonald and Bob Turoff of the Golden Apple Theater. I did all of the interviews I did with them, the individual ones and the couple ones, in a closet in the Golden Apple Theater. Originally, I did Bill and Susan's interviews there because it was pouring rain, and I know that we talked about that, because in all of the interviews, people knocked on the door of the closet. Somebody tried to get something from it in my interview with Bill and Susan. With Bob and Roberta, somebody banged on the door trying to get Bob's attention, I believe. He needed to leave for something. So the interview that I just did And the one that is coming up right now, I did in a closet. And, of course, what that means is that the interview with Bob and Roberta is up next.
All right, I have 10 minutes at the maximum with the very generous Torof McDonald's. McDonald Torofs.
Torof, yes.
Right, to give the appropriate...
Did she tell you how I blew her thing on the radio last week?
We had an interview, so a radio telephone call. And the host called me the night before, and he said, we've got a morning talk show. I like to be a little raunchy. I want to make sure it's okay with you. Thought, you know, maybe I'd say something like, now you've played Dolly, you've played Maine, you've played Mama Rose and Gypsy, you've a Woman of the Year, you get all these big leads. Do you sleep with the producer? and you can say, well, yeah, I have. And then at the very end, I'll say that when Roberta McDonald sleeps with the producer, it's Mrs. Turoff, and it's not my husband's mother because she's dead. So we had this all planned.
Oh, yeah, they're all, yeah.
So
both on phones.
Right.
Both on phones, and he calls and he says, hi, I'm talking to Roberta McDonald and Robert Turoff of the Golden Apple. And Bob says, now, when you're talking to Roberta McDonald, you're talking to Mrs. Turoff.
Oh, God. And wasn't close enough to kick me, but you know, I just blew it, right?
Blew it. I see.
See?
Well,
I tried to figure out something.
To say how to save it?
How to be sexy. Or
well, yeah, he's going to call back again. He wants to do it again next time. You guys work it out, and I'll keep my mouth shut.
Good. I can't believe that.
Okay.
Well, but you know, it's cute because it's his way of laying claim, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, because usually I'm Mr. McDonald.
Mr. McDonald, I know, I'm sure. So, okay, you guys are married?
46 years.
46 years. I don't have to tell you that that's uncommon in your industry.
Yes.
Now, but forget it, in your world,
yeah,
it's uncommon,
yes.
You know? So, do you want to talk a little bit about how you think you did that?
Well, I think we did it because we worked together first. I mean,
you were colleagues?
We were colleagues. I did this Where's Charlie, mm-hmm. for this man in iridescent blue pants and glasses that I thought his nose came off with, but that's another story. And so we had a relationship, and then it just developed into a romance quite quickly, but it was based on mutual respect, I think.
Yeah, I think
and because we're both in the same business, when he's away, I know what he's doing. When I'm away, he knows what I'm doing. There's no worry about, you know, what is she into? Is she sitting at a bar someplace in a hotel? He knows what I'm doing.
Yeah, but you know, you say that as though that, I mean, lots of couples who are both in theater or both in movies or both in music know what the other one's doing, and it doesn't save the marriage.
Well, yeah, that's true.
And you know, we're very square.
Yeah.
Neither one of us drink. Neither one of us smoke.
Yeah.
I have never even had a puff on a
on a recreational drug.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Neither one of our children have ever had a drink or smoked.
Well, so now we're talking, I think, about not only who you are, but maybe where you came from.
Probably.
Could be.
And,
now,
and
we did smoke. I was 3-pack a day.
Oh, yeah.
We both
smoked 10 cigarettes a day.
I stopped.
Yes.
We stopped the same time. I stopped.
Yes.
I took my pack out and put it on the card table. We were playing bridge. 7 years later, I discovered that she was cheating with cigarette. We'd moved down here, opened the theater. She had an elaborate distant early warning system.
It failed me.
You know, it failed.
You know, I never smoked in front of my mother and father. I never smoked in front of him. Never smoked in front of my children. So I would smoke in the car once in a while. And at the theater, of course, in those days, you could light up in the dressing room.
Right.
And I'm so
And who would know anyway,
right.
Because somebody else
and
was smoking.
And I used to chew on half lemons all the time.
You remember Sen-Sen?
I remember it very well.
Okay, well, that was
so
it.
So he walked into the dressing room, and I was mid-puff. And he looked at me like he found me in bed with another man.
And it was over.
So did you stop that?
Yes.
Why did you stop?
Because I said
we're playing bridge.
Right.
I'm in my pack. We're playing bridge, and she looked at me, you selfish person. Actually, I'm cleaning up. She called me a dirty name.
Yes.
Why? because here I'm going to have I have my son, and you're going to die of lung cancer and leave me to raise it all alone.
Oh, you're good. People take lessons from
you. Wow, my goodness. Well, so I pulled my back out, cold turkey, put it there.
Yeah.
She got me, right.
She got you right. Oh. You know, this reminds me when I was in junior high school, and they started to talk about how bad cigarettes were. And I would, my father smoked, and I would come home and talk about it at the dinner table. And I'm the oldest, and my younger sister and my brother started in on my father. My brother was 3, I think, and he was sucking his thumb. And my father made a deal with my brother that he would stop smoking if my brother would stop sucking his thumb. And they both did.
Perfect.
You know,
perfect.
And it's that same thing. It's that, you know, if you get the thing that matters most, but
but then she continued, see? It was just amazing,
I see. Well, of course, clearly when you got caught, you had no grounds to stand on.
No.
Right, you were.
I got down on my hands and knees and said,
mea culpa, right, so sorry.
And, you know, it was...
Anyway, I was doing a show where the person smoked, and it was all about looking for a cigarette. And Mary is the show. Gene Kerr had built this elaborate thing about cigarettes. And so it was easy.
Yes, yes.
They were there.
Yeah.
Did Meyer get a plaque on the wall for not smoking?
No.
Didn't have
no, he had my brother, and he didn't have all the denture stuff to do for my brother.
Okay.
That was his, you know, reward.
Okay. Anyway, that's and we're busy.
Yeah,
I don't know how many plays you've been in, and I direct most of them, and have, and we send plays around the world.
You know,
and we just don't have any time but to be...
Yeah, but I know you're saying that, but that isn't really it.
Well,
but I suspect that it has something to do with your basic philosophy of what life is about and what's acceptable and what's not.
Yeah.
You know.
Could be. Yeah.
You know, and that...
And we both have the same political persuasion.
Well, what you have is a tremendous amount in common.
Yes.
You know, it isn't only that you had romance, but you really have all the basic... building blocks, so to speak.
Yes.
But we do, and in doing.
Yes.
Is being.
Yes, there's no question about it. And you admire each other.
Yeah.
You know.
Sometimes I will bump into her when I'm directing a place, excuse me, but I don't know who she is. Oh, you belong over there. Because we have separate hats.
Yeah.
She's the actress, I'm the director, and it just is one of those things.
And also in that case, she's not Mrs. Turok.
No.
She's you.
You. The actress.
You, right.
You go there. Right, you in the dark hair, go there.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so were either one of you married before?
I was married for 4 months. Okay. And I met the man in the iridescent blue pants.
And said, adios, muchacho?
Never saw him.
Holy cow. Oh, yeah, well, this is Bashir.
I mean, does that make me a rake?
Yeah.
No, I didn't know anything about this.
No.
I've just got my blue pants on. Who the hell knows what you think?
No, what that makes you is late.
Late.
That's all. If you'd gotten there 4 months earlier, you could have saved all that trouble, right?
He was almost an annulment.
Right. Yeah. Was he surprised?
Yes, well, I was doing this Where's Charlie with Bill Hayes, and he was positive.
It was Bill Hayes.
With Bill Hayes, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, though. He was very wealthy, and I had this beautiful apartment on Central Park West with the view of Central Park and a sleep-in maid.
Oh, my God.
Yes. And then we moved into a third-floor walk-up.
I mean, it was a quick life lesson.
It helped our marriage because I think it is true that people sometimes yearn for what they didn't have. Yeah.
And they don't understand that they wouldn't want it if they had it.
Right.
And how old were you when you got married?
I was 29. I was 26, I think.
No, I was 24.
Whatever you say, sweetheart.
Say I was 19.
You know, when you sign an equity contract, you also sign your pension and welfare cards.
Mm-hmm.
And each card says date of birth.
Right.
I don't.
And Roberta writes in on file.
As opposed to none of your business.
Look it up yourself.
If you want
to
know,
you have to know, find it.
It's in the computer.
Right, you're not getting it from me. You know, I could talk to you guys all day, but I know you have to go, and I'm so grateful for the time. So I'm just going to say thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure.
And find off.
When I first got the idea of doing these Anatomy of an Artist interviews, I thought it would be interesting for me and interesting for you, I thought it would be entertaining, informative, maybe even educational. What I hadn't anticipated was that it was going to begin to bring into my life people that I would want to know. So this has turned out to be a gift to me that I had not anticipated. Another gift I had not anticipated when I agreed to do this radio show was the gift of Josh Hackney. I knew that I was going to be struggling with the technical aspect of this show, as well as other aspects of the show, and I did not know that I was going to be so fortunate as to have in my life Josh Hackney, the IT web recording electronics genius who has saved me over and over again and makes this whole thing possible. So I always like to give credit to him. I like to tell you that if you need any of these services, or you just want another nice person in your life, that you should call Josh. And here's his telephone number. It's 941-320-7590. Or you can email him at Josh C. Hackney, JOSHCHACKNEY, at yahoo.com. I think that will take us to the end of this show. And so I'm just going to say that, as always, I will be back next week at this time, and I hope that you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you see my face and figure. I've both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. See that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten limper, but I won't.